Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlesnake Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is Resident Alien, brought to you by the good people at Universal Content Productions, Dark Horse Entertainment, you know, that comic book company, and Amblin Television. Hello, Steven Spielberg, and the Sci-Fi Network. Resident Alien is based on the comic book of the same name by Peter Hogan and Steve Parkhouse. We covered that last night on Source Material Live, and it premiered January 27th, 2021 on the Sci-Fi Network and has been renewed for a second season. Joining me to talk about this is Alexis Haina from Honeysuckle Rose Creations. How do you do, madam?
Hey, doing pretty good. Spent most of the evening cleaning up because my dog completely shredded her dog bed, and now there's little pieces of fabric and fluff in various parts of the house. I'm sitting here going, it's like, the fact that she destroyed it isn't what, you know, bothers me. The fact that the destruction was splayed over so many parts of the house is just like, you know, it's one of those, it's like, the death is not what bothers me. The fact that there's brains in various corners of the roof where it should that's what disturbs me.
It's the gruesome nature of the crime.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we talked fairly at length about how we both came to this property, which was I did a Google search and then asked you about it, and you said, I like Alan Tudyk, and there we are. That's how we arrived here at Resident Alien.
Well, love Alan Tudyk. The man.
I'll tell you what. Let's talk a little bit about Alan Tudyk for a second. Have you had an opportunity to watch Doom Patrol?
No, I haven't. It's on the list of things I need to watch after I am done slaving for you.
Okay, try to find time in between slaving for me to watch at the very least the first season of Doom Patrol. One, the show is phenomenal. I mean, I know I gushed to you and you and I had a big sissy slap fight over, you know, Watchmen and versus The Mandalorian. But I'll tell you what, my other show that I gushed on from that same year was Doom Patrol. Especially the first season. The second season, not as good. Still good, but not as good. But I'll tell you, that first season of Doom Patrol, I have not stopped raving about it.
Well, the fact is that pretty much any fandom Alan Tudyk is a part of, you know, he was a core member of the cast of Firefly. His voiceover work, he has become to Disney a lucky charm and has made appearances in every animated film that they have done in recent years.
I know he was a big part of why everyone liked Rogue One. They liked his robot character as opposed to the weird, sexually aggressive robot character from Solo.
Exactly. Actually, one of my favorite articles I read was Tudyk actually got to talk to Anthony Daniels, who played C-3PO, on the set, because, you know, 3PO and R2 do make a quick cameo appearance in that movie. And they started talking, and Anthony realized he was just there for the day, and he realized that Tudyk was just being mo-capped into And he looked at him, he's like, "You're not actually in a suit, are you?" And Tudyk's like, "No." And Dales is just, it's clear that he's impressed, but at the same time, he's pissed off and looks and goes, "I had screws pushing into my head."
Poor Anthony Daniels. Alan Tudyk is a fantastic actor. And I'll tell you what, we're going to get into this show, and we're going to talk all about it, but I'll kind of, you know, give away the ending here. It's great. And part of the reason why it's great is because Alan Tudyk, I'm realizing, is one of the finest actors of our time. He is phenomenal. Everything he touches is gold.
Absolutely. He could be hilarious. He could be serious. He could be strangely threatening.
Yeah. Like I said, he's the villain in Doom Patrol. And I'll tell you what, he has a line in it that between his delivery and the line itself, it's still something I quote on almost all the podcasts I do when we talk about, like, you know, we talk about this with WandaVision, a lot of how, like, the Marvel stuff kind of falls flat at the end. You know, it's like, now we get to the punchy parts. It's hilarious the way he says it. You know, it's a hilarious line by itself, given, you know, it's sort of mocking comic book tropes. But it's even more funny the way he delivers that line. It's so good.
Alex, he just really is an amazing actor, and he does not get enough respect. You know, I mean, like I said, he's a fan favorite of so many fandoms, but to the general audience, a lot of people are like, wait, who was he? You know, I wouldn't say that his name pops up as commonly as someone you would say. It's like, I don't know, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, those big name stars, but I honestly think he's just as good of an actor.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he does a lot of comedy, and he does a lot of sci-fi, and he was actually just Tuk-Tuk in Raya and the Last Dragon. He'll be Mr. Darling in the forthcoming Peter Pan and Wendy. He was a bunch of different voices in Frozen 2. He was Iago, the voice in the 2019 live-action remake of Aladdin. Like, you know, he does a lot of voice work, not a lot of dramatic stuff. Like, I'm just looking over his IMDb real quick, and maybe there's something in there that I'm missing, but it seems like, oh, he's on Harley Quinn, and he's hilarious on that.
He was an iRobot. He was the voice of Sonny the Robot, and really gave a lot of character to that.
He was the House of Tomorrow in the Wonderful World of Mickey. By the way, that's one of my son's favorite podcasts to listen to, for me and you.
I still love it.
He tells me that all the time. in any case, he's in a lot of like sci-fi, fantasy, comic book, animated stuff. He's not known for like he hasn't had that Jim Carrey moment, you know, or the tall actor who's an elf who
Will
screams
Ferrell.
All of his lines. Will Ferrell. You know, both of those actors were able to make the jump from stupid comedies to dramas. And people are like, holy crap, they're actually really good actors. Adam Sandler, too. Adam Sandler makes a lot of, like, pothead, stupid, idiot comedies that people really enjoy. But then you see him in a dramatic role, you're like, holy crap, he can actually act.
Yeah, it's just depressing that he keeps now picking films off of, where do I want to go on vacation?
Yeah, well, I mean, look. I'm not gonna knock a guy for figuring out how to scam the, you know, Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, the point is that I think people tend to overlook Alan Tudyk because he hasn't had that. Oh, he was in Trumbo. Maybe besides that, he hasn't really had that like breakout dramatic role. And then a slew of pictures behind, like Robin Williams, for a while just stopped doing comedies, and all he did were either dramas or thrillers, or, you know, something not a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, holy crap, Robin Williams is amazing. And
yeah.
Like he hasn't had that moment yet. He hasn't had that slew of pictures where people are like, you know what, Alan Tudyk. He's a good working actor, people love him, and he's great in this. So let's get into it. So Resident Alien, the first episode here, the pilot, starts much the same way the book did. An alien spacecraft is struck by lightning and crash lands near the rural town of Patience, Colorado. Its pilot, whose real name is unpronounceable by humans, was on a mission to wipe out human life on Earth, which is different from the book. Now stranded, he must blend in by assuming human form and the identity of Dr. Harry Vanderspiegel, whom he killed upon encountering. For months, Harry has been searching the mountains for his device that will wipe out humanity, and fishing the lake for Dr. Vanderspiegel's corpse. Harry is asked by Sheriff Mike otherwise known as Big Black, more on that later, and Deputy Liv to examine the body of Sam Hodges, the town doctor, and his behavior is off-putting but accepted. He even takes on the doctor's job with help from the head nurse, Asta Twelvetrees, who is played by Sarah Tomko, who I did some research on and apparently has been in every garbage movie you've never heard of. Like, she's great in this. She gives a stellar performance, and she's very attractive, and she's just amazing. And I'm like, wow, she must have been in all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, nope, every garbage B-movie put out direct-to-video you've ever seen or never seen. I don't know where she came from.
Heard for it because she doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I searched. And because sometimes, like, when we did Boss Level, I'm like, oh, Naomi Watts, holy shit, she's been in everything. And so I was like, okay, I bet Sarah Tomko's been in a bunch of stuff that I know of, just never saw, whatever. I'm like, nope, it's a bunch of B-movies. Weird that, like, she made the jump to this. But anyway, good for her. Asta Twelvetrees is who she plays.
Mm-hmm.
But he learns his true identity can be seen by Max, Mayor Ben Hawthorne's young son. After drinking heavily in order to fit in, Harry attempts unsuccessfully to kill Max. The next day, Harry rescues Asta from her abusive boyfriend, Jimmy, while they are moving things out of the house, and Asta confides in Harry that she gave up her and Jimmy's child for adoption when she was 16. Originally attributing Sam's death to suicide, Harry re-examines the body at the funeral and concludes he was poisoned. Harry confides in Asta that one of the mourners must be the killer. Beginning his first shift as the new town doctor, Harry discovers his first patient is, of course, the young child who can see his true identity, Max. So
I love it. Walks in and we see him in his alien guise and he says, "This is some bullshit."
Yeah. Yeah, liberal use of swear words in this show. First thing I noticed. So I've been talking for a while now. What's your first impression of this first episode? How did it grab you?
The first episode was available on YouTube. I don't have cable. We have just all the streaming services connected to our main desktop computer. We've got a TV hooked up to that. So I had to do a lot of searching to find a lot of the episodes. But the first episode on YouTube, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I love the way that they were able to show his human guys and the alien guys. This was something that I brought up in our review of the graphic novel last night, that I felt that while it was kind of humorous that we see him all the time as an alien in there, we never actually see what the rest of the town sees or even what Asta sees, because she's the one who can see a little bit through his disguise. She doesn't see his alien form. She just sees him as a blur. But here, aside from the opening shot where we see the alien fishing, which is almost shot for shot identical to the graphic novel, the only time we see him in his alien form is when we're looking through Max's eyes.
Yeah,
and I thought that was very creative, not only because it allows us, I think, to identify and sympathize more with Harry because we see him as a human, but it also ramps up the fear that when Max sees him, because frankly, his alien form is pretty damn spooky. You know, he's got the razor sharp teeth, those black huge eyes. He looks like his face is part starfish, kind of. It's a little terrifying. And when he comes in, and not to mention there's something about the way, I don't know if it's the way his eyes are formed or the mouth is formed, but it almost looks like he's got a permanent snarl there. And I'm guessing that was probably intentional to make him just a teeny tiny bit scarier. And I thought that was very creative when you see him, because yeah, that is terrifying, and the fact that we only see it when this kid is freaking out.
I like the fact that at least one character can see his true form, and it does set up a lot of what goes on later in the series. They go back to this a lot, so that's fun. The show rests upon the idea of he for the length of time that he's been here, he's avoided humans, and so he hasn't had to interact with them, and so he hasn't had to learn proper appropriate human behavior, and now he's thrust into it. Plus, everyone thinks he's this other guy, and so he now has to pretend to be all that he was, including a doctor. And that the comedy lies therein. So, and I'm just kind of fast forwarding to later on in this series. There are cringe moments in anything that I watch that make me want to fast forward. They're too much for me. And I did okay with this, even though there was a lot of that in this series. There's a lot of him saying and doing things that make me go, it's funny, but this is hard. This is painful to watch. When he's telling his wife who will come visit him later on in the season, that he wants to have sex with her, but he does so in the most clinical and off-putting way. He's like, I will then mount you. And it's like, oh, God. And it just goes on forever.
Yeah, oh, my God.
I almost hit the fast-forward button. That was too much of like a Three's Company moment for me. He just goes on and on and on with it, and I'm like, whoa. That's the worst that the show ever gets. The rest of it is you know, just below or far below that, so it's tolerable and it's funny and it's cute. And Alan Tudyk, because he's got a lot of charm and pizzazz, and he's so funny, he pulls it off really well. Like, I didn't realize how much he acts with his face, because you see him in voice roles so much. Or hear him in voice roles, rather. But, like, if you watch his performance, he does a lot with his lips and chin that make him look hysterical. And so, like, he's saying stuff, and then he's doing things with his lips and chin, and you're like, oh, my God, that's hilarious. He, like, even though you're seeing a human face, he looks alien. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he has a very interesting face that his mouth... He doesn't have a very wide, round mouth. It's a very like, horizontal, slit mouth. So sometimes when he's talking, it almost looks like he's talking, like, grating through his teeth. Yet, you know, when you talk to somebody and they're just like, yeah, sure. He kind of gives that impression sometimes. And yeah. I think he may have done that just a tiny bit more, because we get a couple of scenes where we see... Tudyk also plays Vanderspiegel in flashbacks, as the actual doctor before he was killed. And you see he actually emotes a little bit more and his mouth's a little rounder. So I get the feeling that he permanently gave himself that, just that little forced pull on his mouth to make it look like he's just a tiny bit more uncomfortable. There's a really great scene later on where he has a hallucination that he's talking to Vanderspiegel's corpse, and the corpse is yelling at him. It's like, this is my house and that's my wife and everything, and it's really passionate.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really great scene. I think one of my other favorite things about the show is that it does a great balance with the narration. So many shows, I feel that they get a little overwhelming with the narration, or it's clear. I think we brought this up with the Birds of Prey movie review, that it was, you sometimes feel that the narration was added because some idiot at the studio figured that the audience wasn't going to figure out what was going on or something.
Right.
Or they're just like, well, we want to give this person more screen time, so let's have her do a voiceover. This is a really good balance. And one of the things I really like is when they cut back and forth between the narration and then Harry immediately contradicting it. For example, in the first episode, Asta was like, well, what are you doing this late at night? And you hear the narration go, I strangled and drowned a guy 4 months ago, and I have to search the lake for his bloated corpse before some fisherman finds it. But Harry just looks at it and goes, just some stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. So I want to talk about some other characters here, just real briefly on Sarah Tomko as Asta. I love her in this. She's very earnest. She's, like I said, she's very pretty. I think she's got a lot of moxie. I think she's a good balance to Harry, to Alan Tudyk's Harry character. I think they have a lot of on-stream chemistry, which is important because they spend a lot of time together in this show. I like the fact that her and the Darcy character, her name is Darcy. Yes, Darcy. I like that her and Darcy are good, strong women without being overbearing, naggy, shrew types, which is an unfortunate, like, TV trope. Like, they found a way to write human women to make them both likable, strong, and, you know, and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
The writing on both of those characters is actually pretty phenomenal, especially for, like, cable television. And, like, not premium cable television, I mean garbage cable television, like sci-fi.
Absolutely. Especially since you know that less talented writer would probably have Asta end up as Harry's love interest, or, you know, her kind of falling in love with them a little bit more. They form an incredibly strong bond, but they're just friends.
Right.
And running joke that, because Darcy does go on one or two dates with Harry, mm-hmm. and she makes jokes like, the man that I love is in there. It's like, she doesn't actually love him.
No, she's clearly, you know, a broken individual, and that much is apparent in the first couple episodes with her. You know, when she tells him her story, and you see her interactions with her buddy, who, you know, they give each other jazz, you know, calling each other whore and whatnot. You know, at the end of the season when she kisses the mayor, like, you know, Darcy's messed up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and messed up women will make interesting decisions. And so it's not unbelievable that a weird, like, she would fall in love with a weirdo like Harry. And not even in love, but convince herself that that's what it is because she's messed up.
Exactly. We find out more about her and her failed try at the Olympics and how hard life has been for her. But she's still a really great character. You know, she's not just, again, they would probably just write her in as a bit of the town floozy. And we do have a town floozy with the woman who runs the bowling alley.
Right.
Who said, screw it, she's a dumb, idiotic blonde, and we're not going to really develop her anymore. And that's fine.
Now, you can have some two-dimensional comic relief. It's fine.
Yeah, but I love how she's also a mountaineering expert. You get these great scenes with her going out onto the glacier and the mountain and everything.
Okay, she's a fucking hero. She saves Harry and Asta at the end.
Exactly. No, she's well-trained in mountaineering, and she knows what she's doing. It's really impressive.
So I really like Asta. I really like Darcy. We'll talk a little bit more as we go on. But I have to talk about... Oh, gosh, what's his name? Sheriff Mike Thompson, Big Black.
Oh.
Wait.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And Elizabeth Bowen as Sheriff Liv Baker. So, first of all, I hated Big Black when we first meet him. And for the most of the season, he just grated on my nerves because, like, it's the same stupid, he's a sociopath joke over and over and over again. And with Liv, it's the same, I'm a mousy, no-spine-having, wimpy wallflower joke every time they have an interaction. And I'm like, if this is all this is going to be, I'm going to have to fast-forward through some of their scenes. This is unbearable. And mm-hmm. then they have the scene later on in the season where she's had enough of his abuse, and it is abuse, and...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And she quits, and then they have the makeup where they do Wind Beneath My Wings, and I almost texted you, and I'm like, wait till you get to the Wind Beneath My Wings scene, because I cried. Big wuss, I cried. I was like, oh! You know? Like, it was... What I'm trying to say is that even though they start off kind of jokey and stupid, you get to know them as people as the... You know, they made it a point to get to know them as people as the season goes on. They end up developing some more depth to them. And then they blow them up and they bring them back together and you realize they're people too. And pretty well-written people once you get beyond the initial stupidity. And I ended up really enjoying them towards the end. And when they're actually working side by side on the murder board, I was like, wow, I'm looking forward to seeing more of that next season because I actually like their... I like their on-screen chemistry when Big Black's not a huge dick.
Exactly. His character is really interesting because, again, you think he's just going to be this total psychotic, you know, pain in the ass, and he is a colossal pain in the ass, but you learn a little bit more that it's more just massive insecurities. There's a conversation he has with his dad that he had a career in Washington, D.C. that apparently ended very badly. So you kind of get the idea that maybe I have this sneaking suspicion that no one else in the town actually knows that, and he is so terrified anyone's going to figure out if they start digging into his past. And I do really like Liv Baker. Okay, we are the deputy sheriff, Liv. We learn a lot more about her. We see her outside the office. I think it's adorable that she's on a freaking bowling league with Asta and Darcy. That's just so stinking cute. And, yeah, the fact that the sheriff has a, a bulldog who he gives more respect to than his deputy, an adorable little bulldog named Cletus.
I felt the Cletus stuff came out of nowhere, though. I didn't see much of Cletus in the early episodes, and then there's all of a sudden that one scene where he's like, you need to respect Deputy Cletus, and it's like, when the fuck did this happen?
It didn't use him as much, and I have a sneaking suspicion that the studio wasn't sure how much was too much and didn't want this to turn into our show has a happy animal sidekick kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So
all around, like, pilots can be kind of unbearable. And a phrase often said on TV Party Tonight is, takes a little time to find its footing, but eventually it gets there and it's a solid end, you know, by the time you get to it. This one, I have to say, like, you know, sci-fi known for Sharknado movies, and, you know, we did the Banana Splits a little ways back, and, you know, sci-fi known for schlock. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, man, this one, they put it, they kicked it right through the uprights, man. From the first episode to the last, I don't have a tremendous amount of complaints here. This first pilot episode really grabbed me, has a fairly stellar cast, and I was excited to see what was going to happen next.
Honestly, I kept forgetting this was a sci-fi original. You cut out the swearing, and I could see this easily airing on any of the big major networks.
Yeah. Absolutely. Weirdly enough, I could see this on, I could absolutely see this on, like, CBS or ABC or something. Maybe not ABC, but NBC or CBS, for sure.
Network or something, yeah.
All right.
Like I said, the swearing and a little bit of blood is what puts it on sci-fi, obviously.
Well, I think that, and sci-fi, as I've said before, has, you know, I've gone out of the way to adapt every indie. Wynonna Earp is a comic. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
No idea. Every once in a while, I'll go through the list and I'll start realizing, and I'll start finding more shows that I eventually want to review on here. All sci-fi stuff, all comic adaptations. It's amazing. Episode 2, Homesick. Max runs screaming out of the clinic like you do after Harry tries to behead him. With help from Liv, Max distributes hand-drawn posters of Harry's alien form concerning his parents. Darcy, the town bartender, jokes with Harry that should he want to kill someone, he should make it seem like an accident. Harry cuts the brakes on Max's bicycle, but the resulting accident only causes a wound requiring stitches on Max's arm. He and Max verbally spar during the procedure, feeling homesick. Harry starts gathering supplies to repair his ship, including mining tellurium, which has levitation properties. Meanwhile, a man falls from a snowy cliff while taking a selfie, but is suspended by an unseen force mid-fall. He is later discovered by Lisa and David, still suspended and frozen to death above what appears to be a piece of Harry's crashed ship. So what did you think of episode 2?
I absolutely love the verbal sparring between Harry and Max. What was the line? It's like, you can look at me, Max. I don't bite. Whispers, actually, I do.
He was definitely riding that line between, you know, flirting is not the right word, but, like, Alan Tudyk, the actor, is having fun with Max in that scene while still trying to keep an air of menace. It really rode that line.
Yeah. And, again, I just got to say it. Makeup department, oh, my God. The fact that they're, again, you're able to convey so much with that mask on.
Mm-hmm.
That's so impressive.
I thought the bit with the skier falling and being held and suspended, I couldn't quite understand why he couldn't, like, using a swim motion, he couldn't get for any kind of friction, because I thought he landed on something that was just invisible, but as it turns out, it was just like an anti-gravity thing, and I guess he couldn't get friction to move himself, and so he died, which is creepy.
Think of it this way, did you ever see the movie Passengers with Chris Pratt?
I have not.
There's a scene where the gravity is turned off while...
That's Jennifer What's-Her-Face, Mystique, right?
Lawrence, yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where while she's swimming and the gravity gets turned off, and she is stuck in a bubble of water, and because there's no gravity, she can't really maneuver in and out of the water to get air.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of the same thing.
Okay, anything else about... I can talk a little bit more about Darcy here. First of all, Darcy is an adorably attractive woman. Just great looking.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they could have written her off as just sort of comedy relief, and instead they gave her hero moments, they gave her depth, they gave her, you see her sort of talking about wanting to matter and having all of this regret, you know, and she's living with this sort of broken psyche and just trying to make the best of things. And so she has these moments of great levity and also has these moments of great depression, and she messes up, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful character. When Alan Tudyk or Sarah Tomko or the gal who plays Darcy were on screen, I was super into the show. There are shows that I watch and like they'll go to a certain character, and I'll be like, ugh, all of your stuff stinks. Not these three. Their stuff was fantastic.
The dialogue on this show just kills me every single time. I love all the scenes where Harry is trying to figure out social cues working as a doctor. It's like, I've discovered the woman does not have cancer. I've also discovered that tit is not the preferred term for breast.
Let's see those teats.
It appears you're in excellent health. Concerning your breast, did you recently eat a dead rodent? Like, he just sounds, and it's hilarious because he's able to say this so earnestly.
Yeah.
It's the attitude that he was able to pull with the Rogue One robot, that he's able to say lines like this without sounding too, it's snarky, but it's not mean snarky, you know? It's kind of, it's a hilarious bit.
Yeah, I feel like the direction he got a lot of the times, you know, for his performance was, you have Asperger's. Got it?
Yeah.
Like, you're very intelligent, you have Asperger's, and you haven't been around humans for 3 years. Go.
I love the other line. But they confirm later that aliens actually have been visiting Earth for, you know, millions of years and helped humans, you know, develop so much. Yeah, you know, all of those theories are apparently true. And he's talking about Max not giving up. Where was that effort from the humans when we were helping them build Stonehenge? Bunch of lazy idiots sitting around drinking mead, making us all do all the work. Damn druids.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Just great.
Yeah, they in developing this show, they had a lot of fun with the concept of alien intervention and interaction with the human race. You know, it was like, that's going to be a central tenet of this show. What can we do to make it funny? And it works. Episode 3, Secrets. When a fisherman finds the real Harry's foot in the lake, Harry tampers with evidence to cover up his crime and then daringly retrieves the rest of the corpse right under everyone's noses. Meanwhile, Kate struggles to figure out what to do about Max's extraterrestrial claims, which no one believes except for his classmate, Sahar. Also, Asta discovers one of Sam's prescription pads was stolen and has been used to sell prescription drugs to students, including Jay, who works part-time at the clinic. Darcy flirts with Harry, and David and Lisa chat with a cowboy whom Harry encountered in his alien form. Lisa then murders him after learning that he was planning on publishing a book about it.
Yeah, we're going to find out later on in this, as the series progresses, that Lisa is a full-on sociopath.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because so that's Manda Morgan, as I'm guessing how you pronounce her name, plays Lisa Casper, a sociopathic woman who works for General McAllister. I like how that's the description. Like, no, you know, not serious, not, you know, dutiful, fucking sociopath. Terrific.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. This is a character who, when they find the alien spaceship, they're talking about how how it's made of material they've never seen before, and they have to be delicate and figure out how to open it, and she just walks up and goes, well, haven't you used dynamite?
I'm trying to find the actor who plays her partner. Anyway, yeah, she's... the part that she's in, she definitely has a bit of menace to her, and she's definitely a psycho, but she's also, you know, her stuff is over the top amusing.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's funny because at first you think she's just very determined. We don't know a lot about these two characters until later on in the series. They're the ones who really get more of a backstory.
Yeah.
And think that they're just your standard secret agents working for the government, and you think it's like, well, okay, yeah, so she was you know killing to cover their tracks and everything, but the more you learn, it's like she really just has a thing for killing people.
Yeah. So that's Alex Barima as Lieutenant David Logan, who is abused by this woman, unfortunately. Just takes a lot of crap from her, and he's the one that figures out that there are aliens among us. And he works for Linda Hamilton's General McAllister. Linda Hamilton's great in this, by the way. You know, I know, you know, she gets associated with the Terminator franchise, and people don't know much else about what she's done. But Linda Hamilton, hell of an actress.
Yeah, but I'm not going to lie. I'll admit that when I saw her on screen in her first appearance, I shouted, Sarah Connor!
There we go.
Would you rather I yelled, Children of the Corn?
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about Levi Feiler, who plays Ben Hawthorne, who's the mayor. And in the first couple of episodes, he is such a nice guy. And he's always playing opposite the sheriff, who's such a huge dick. And so they have some weird on-stream chemistry together to where, you know, he's overbearing Ben Hawthorne, Max's dad. You know, he's like this. He has to compensate for the sheriff's overcompensation by underplaying things. His wife... And I'm trying to find her character list here.
Her name's Kate.
Kate. That's a good start. Kate. This is a weirdly listed group of people here. Anyway, so Kate, his wife, I thought she was okay in the beginning, and I thought her and her husband had some interesting chemistry together. And then, she spends a good couple of episodes just being utterly flabbergasted with Max's behavior, to the point where she becomes, she's the only character I kind of dislike in this, where she's slightly shrewish. And then they course-corrected with her. They have a bit where she finally just tells her husband, I need someone to... be confrontational with me. I need someone to challenge me, which is a thing often said in relationships. Just don't give me my way all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he tried to overcompensate prior to that by ordering for her and everything. He gets the "you got to be a man with these women" lesson from somebody, and so he does the ordering for her and all that. And then they hash it out, and then he's on a roll now. So he's like, and some other things about you I don't like. And she finally fucks off, and she's like, never mind. But I. They started off kind of rough with those two, and then, like I said, then they course corrected with all of that, and then there's, of course, the final blow off where they attack Lisa and Logan, and they beat him up with pots and pans and drive him out of the house to save Max and Sahar, and of course they start making out. I'm like, all right, I'm okay with these two. And then that was kind of the fun of the show, where you do some of these characters you start off with a little shaky, and then by the end of it, you're like, oh, everyone here is cool, man.
Yeah, it did kind of strike me as interesting, the decision to change the character of the mayor so much from the graphic novel. We talked last night about how the mayor in there might as well have been the mayor from Jaws.
Right.
And this is a total 180. This is a young, naive, people pleaser, always got a big smile on his face, trying to be so optimistic and trying to be so cheerful with everyone in the town. It's not a characterization we see often for a mayor, mm-hmm. especially a small town mayor. A lot of times with shows like this or stories like this, when you get the leaders of small town, it's very, this is my town and I know what's going on in it and I don't want anyone screwing around in it. That is not the way they went with this at all. It's really interesting.
Yep. Episode 4, Birds of a Feather. Ben and Kate Hawthorne invite Harry to dinner in an effort to prove to Max that he's normal.
Good luck with that.
Unfortunately, he invites Darcy, who gets drunk and proceeds to discuss her childhood romance with Ben, like you do. As they dine, Sahar steals Harry's house keys and has copies made. Later, Harry meets Asta's family and blurts out that Jay is the daughter she gave up for adoption, but later apologizes to Asta and tells her that his wife died. And he means his alien wife. That's going to come into play later. Also, Liv vents her professional frustrations to Darcy. The kids are knocked unconscious by alien technology while searching the cabin, and the real Harry's wife suddenly appears. Dun, dun, dun. All right, so things are cooking now. What do you think of episode 4?
Also really good. One of the things I noticed is that when you have a character like Darcy and it's like gets drunk and proceeds to discuss her childhood romance with Ben, you think it's just going to be, awkward city. But part of the fun is that Darcy and Ben actually have really good chemistry. And I'm not saying Ben doesn't have chemistry with the woman who plays his wife. They have chemistry too. But you get a great scene with them chatting about their childhood romance, and it's believable. And again, Ben is very young, so he's probably, you know, just, you know, like, oh my God, yeah, I totally remember doing that. He's probably not picking up on the social cues that Kate is ungodly uncomfortable about this whole thing.
Yeah.
Again, very, very believable.
Mm-hmm. I thought the dinner episode, I mean, it runs a little long, but the entire scene, it runs over the course of most of the episode. But it has to run long because they need time for Sahar to get the keys and all of that. And so you also have Max, who has to now fake liking the alien. You know, and so that's suspicious. There's a lot of fun interplay between the characters in this episode. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. Not to mention, I love that when he runs in, sees the kids unconscious from the alien technology, and feels like, goes, damn it, they're still alive.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about him. It's like, he's not a villain, he's not an anti-hero, but he is an alien there to kill the human race. And he does have low opinions of the human race, because he is a highly advanced alien species. And so, like, I think deep down, Harry is good, but there's a lot of bad on top of that inner good. And that comes out in those really funny lines of dialogue. Like, it not delivered right by the right actor, this whole thing doesn't work. But Alan Tudyk just nails it pitch perfect.
Absolutely. And of course, yeah, now we get to go into learning about Harry's wife, Isabel.
Yeah. So that's episode 5, Love Language. Isabel doesn't know what to make of Harry's odd behavior. And although he's annoyed by her intrusive presence, he gradually warms to his wife. Max learns that his parents are planning to send him to a special school. So Sahar intervenes and gets Harry to agree to a truce, which is a really great scene. It was right out of Heat.
I absolutely love when they're sitting there and they finally just start asking each other questions, and he goes, and Max asks, you know, why can't I still see, why am I able to see you? And he answers, so why do humans fold pizza? Basic engineering, it's too floppy. That was great.
Although, also, Jay discovers Asta is her biological mother. Darcy struggles with her feelings for Harry. The sheriff receives toxicology results that prove Sam was poisoned. So one of the things, we've sort of neglected this in the conversation, but one of the things about this show is that one of the central things it revolves around is a murder mystery. Who killed the doctor? We know it wasn't the alien, but who in fact was it? It's established that the reason, the way he's found is that his throat was slit, and initially, Harry says, oh, well, he tried to give himself a tracheotomy, but then why did he try to give himself a tracheotomy? And so, slowly but surely, we're sprinkling in more information to lead us to the mystery. And it'll be resolved by the end of the season as to who... Here's the thing, and maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, so we should round back to this, but I want to throw this out there. I didn't quite get a clear-cut motivation for why he was killed in the first place. When we thought it was the wife, the widow, it kind of made a degree of sense because the sheriff just sort of blurts it out in the middle of arresting her.
He was having an affair. They have proof of that. So, you know, she does look like the guilty party. But yeah.
The doctor and her were having an affair?
No, not the doctor. She was having an affair with that other dude that she saw going into the the sheriff saw her going to the restaurant with.
Okay. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay.
The I don't know who he was. Some dude with a beard. I didn't catch what his character was.
Okay.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. The real Harry Van Der Spiegel was the one who murdered the doctor. Yeah, I went back and looked through plot synopsis and recaps and everything. I'm like, I can't find a reason either. I'm assuming we're going to learn about that in the second season.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm not the only one. Because sometimes we do this and, like, you pick up on a detail that I missed that happens quite often, as a matter of fact. and so, like, this time I'm like, watch me, I just missed it, and it was clearly stated at some point, and Alexis is going to trip over herself correcting me about it. And I'm like, nope, good. We both don't know what it is. Perfect. Okay.
I do love the scene with the sheriff in the diner when the toxicology reports comes in and finds out that he was poisoned, and he, without even freaking thinking where he is and how crowded the diner is, shouts out, "Holy shit, Sticks, we got ourselves a murder!" Yeah. Everyone's staring at him.
So what'd you think of the actress who plays the wife? I thought, the flashbacks with her and Harry were fun. I thought her and, Alien Harry were some fun interactions. She's, a very pretty actress. I thought some of this, when developing a television show, they keep adding balls to throw into the air. They keep, she lasts over the course of a couple of episodes before, they send her away. And sometimes I feel like they storyboard out a show run, a series, and then they suddenly realize they don't have enough material to last 10 episodes or 12 episodes or whatever it is. And so they have to go back and then add stuff in. I'm not entirely sure her being there added a lot to... I guess she's a device to get him to feel human emotions, and so when he does, and then there's the bigger issues of him and Asta breaking up temporarily, their friendship, and all, and the various other things that happened to him, to where he finally comes to the conclusion that emotions hurt, humanity is painful, everyone must die. I guess that's the road we needed to travel in order to get to that place, but it also still felt a bit tacked on. What did you think of, the mini story with him and the wife?
I did love the flashback where she and the real Harry meet at the art exhibit and how they flirt and everything. That was, they have genuine chemistry, and that was a really good scene. I did feel that we didn't get a lot with her personality, though. We have a scene where she runs into the clinic when she finds Sahar's scarf. She thinks it's, a woman's scarf. She's like, "Well, who are you been cheating on me with?" And Asta's like, "Wait, you said your wife was dead?" And Isabel throws a hissy fit, which I do not blame her in the slightest, and throws the doctor files all over the place and then storms out. But then when Harry goes back to the cabin, she's there dressed up cooking steaks for dinner. She goes, "I didn't like the way I left things." Like, he said you were dead and you threw a hissy fit, and all of a sudden you've come to and realized maybe I was in the wrong?
Maybe I overreacted just a touch.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like we were missing a scene where she kind of calms down and decided, maybe I should. I guess I'm just missing the point of where you decide when your husband tells people you're dead that you think, well, maybe I should give him another chance.
Clearly, there's a logical explanation for all of this. He's going through a crisis of some kind. All right, Sexy Beast. I love the title of this because I know the context from the dialogue that it comes from. Harry's jealousy becomes overwhelming upon meeting Ethan Stone, the handsome and virtuous new town doctor. Harry tells the sheriff about the stolen prescription pad. He dislocates Ethan's shoulder while arm wrestling and repeatedly drugs Isabel so he can sneak out to search for his device. Deputy Liv remains on the ball with her investigations, unlike the sheriff, who makes a fool of himself grilling a teenage suspect. Oh, that's hilarious shit, by the way. That scene is probably one of my favorites in the entire series so far, where they just keep cutting to him randomly yelling at this kid, and it's all stupid shit and completely unprofessional.
Yeah, but the sheriff apparently thought that he could play good cop, bad cop all by himself, but instead he just comes across like he's got a freaking split personality or something.
Yeah, he's half an idiot. Also in a flashback, viewers learn the story of General Eleanor Wright, who saw a UFO when she was a child. 50 years later, after Harry's spaceship briefly blipped on military surveillance, Wright recruits David and Lisa for a covert investigation, which eventually leads them to Harry's invisible spaceship. So the stuff with, you know, Mr. Perfect, Ethan Stone was cute, and Harry, I know that when he says the guys who work on cars, they have a word for this. It's called sexy beast. Alan Tudyk makes that funny, that line.
Absolutely. I will say that I feel that the character of Ethan Stone is incredibly two-dimensional, but I think he's meant to be incredibly two-dimensional. I mean, he is literally too perfect. He has a one-night stand with Darcy, and when she wakes up in the house and he is cooking her blueberry pancakes and there's fresh fruit and everything, I'm just like, wow, oh my god, wow. He's handsome, he's a doctor, he did his research on the town, he's impressing everyone, he speaks French because he's able to talk with Isabel, who knows some French from her time. I don't know why she knows French, but it's like, wow, you guys just said we have to make the most perfect man possible, absolutely no flaws whatsoever.
Yeah, he's a narrative device. He's there because they got to get him out of the clinic. Number one, they need to move him on to doing other things. Like, I was happy that they moved him on from the clinic because I couldn't do an entire season of that. That's not what the show is. Ultimately, we have to get him. We have to move the stuff on with his spaceship and the device. They've talked about it. They've set it up in the beginning. They played around for 4 or 5 episodes of him in the clinic and his odd town interactions with people and isn't he a weirdo and how funny is that? And that's all well and good. Now we have to move on to the second half of this. And so Ethan Stone is pretty much there to move him out of the clinic. And, you know, and they can play around with jealousy because he's, you know, this sexy looking fella. And that's fine. I was okay with it. He didn't have to be a fleshed out character. He needed to be a proper narrative device, and he was.
Yeah, I did also like the little tiny, it's just a tiny moment where, what is it, David and Lisa find the invisible ship, and Lisa just chucks the freaking tablet because she thinks it's not working. It hits the ship, and then she immediately calls the general, and she goes, "I found it," and you see the look on David's face just like, oh, screw you, bitch.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else about the Sexy Beast episode?
Again, awesome seeing Linda Hamilton in this role. She is such. Okay, I'm never going to call. I don't think I can call Linda Hamilton a really great actress, but she is always so much fun whenever she shows up.
Yeah, she's solid.
She's solid, yeah. And she plays leadership roles really well.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I know Robert and I made endless fun of. Dark Fate, because of the greater conversation around woke Hollywood, which I do not want to get into now. But that wasn't Linda Hamilton's fault. We didn't have any problem with her per se. We had a problem with the movie itself, but her performance in it was great. You know, she's rock solid.
I do like the bit when we see her character. First of all, the scene of her character as a child seeing the UFO over the lighthouse when all the clocks stopped and everything. That is insanely well done. That's like something out of a freaking sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah.
And I love how when David is talking about the stuff with the superiors, she is able to flip so well from, you know, very casually and very calmly dissuading what he's saying to talk to him outside, going, "No, sorry, I just had to put on a show because this needs to be, kept under wraps."
Right, because she wants to find the alien for whatever her nefarious purpose is, and she does not want to give up the alien to higher authority.
Exactly. Well, she wants to find the alien because she saw it as a kid, and she needs to prove to the world that, you know, what she saw was right. Oh, okay. Apparently, someone just woke up and wants to join the conversation. Hi, Cleo. Okay.
While you tend to your dog, I'm going to go ahead and pay some bills. Because we need to talk about Grammarly. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes, while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to download Grammarly for free. Is your dog properly attended to, madam?
Yeah, I'm giving her a dog treat. We have a banister on our second floor, and when she looks out over the banister, she sometimes tends to forget that she can actually go downstairs and join us. She tends to see the banister and think she's in a cage.
Okay.
It's only 4 months old. This dog has not figured out...
I feel like your other dog gets no love, because all I ever hear about is you and your various puppy problems. And what happens is the other dog, like, in a room listening to the Sisters of Mercy, you know, and he's got the blinds down and he's putting on black makeup?
No, actually, he was asleep at my feet until Cleo started crying.
Okay. I like the impression, though, that your dog is now a goth teenager.
Hang out with too many goths. I don't need a goth teenager for a dog.
The Green Glow, Episode 7. After discovering Harry's been drugging her, Isabel is so furious that she returns to New York. Let me just stop there. That whole bit is hilarious, especially the way that it's done, because that goes back to the conversation we were having before about him. Like, he drugs her coffee for the first time, and so he's being all awfully romantic. He's like, oh, look, it's conflict-free coffee with, you know, or something, whatever it was, coffee with conflict-free sugar. You know, and he's making sexy breakfast and all of this other stuff. And then he's like, I'm going to build a fire, and we are going to do the uppity-downy in the outy, you know, or whatever it is he says. It's like, just awkward and horrible.
I could have gone a whole lifetime without hearing you say that.
You would be on the couch by the fire, bouncy, bouncy.
Oh, my God.
is more or less what he says to her. When you're done harming yourself, let me know.
Harming myself? I feel for your wife.
I'm doing Alan Tudyk here. That's the thing that we're doing. Anyway.
That line to try to seduce her before.
but he's dragging this out. He's purposely going on and on and on, waiting for the drugs to kick in. So, and then she falls asleep. And then later on, he does the same bit to her again. And they do it where, like, he's trying to get out. And then, you know, as somebody who is often involved in a project and can become very focused and has a wife who wants to tell him about all the things, I sympathized with Alan Tudyk in that scene. Because he's like, I just want to be in the snow looking for my device, and she's like rambling on and purposely doing it to mess with him. And and then finally she drinks the tea, or, you know, so he thinks, and then she fakes falling down, and then off he goes again. And it's a very funny, humorously well-done scene. But she's faking, and it's, you know, she tracks him later. And this, well, here, I'll just read. The loss of his job as the town doctor and the loss of his spaceship drives Harry into a depression. In a drug and alcohol-induced blackout, Harry dreams of real Harry's corpse, who attacks him for killing and stealing his life, and taunts Harry for failing in his mission. To cheer up, Harry, Darcy, and Asta get him high, and he ends up telepathically conversing with an octopus cousin trapped in a tank at a Japanese restaurant, played by Nathan Fillion, because of course you are.
We have to have our mini Firefly reunion.
I couldn't tell, by the way, if that was Nathan Fillion or if that was Patton Oswalt. Turns out it was Nathan Fillion. Jimmy leads the...
I couldn't tell either, but I absolutely love it. It's like, wait, no, get me out of here!
Jimmy leads the cops to the stolen prescription pad, but when the sheriff fails to acknowledge Liv's role in single-handedly apprehending the suspect, he tells him off and quits. We talked about that earlier. Harry admits to Ben and Kate that he misdiagnosed their son, and in return, Max helps him to locate his lost device, which is on a glacier, because he can see the green glow of the metal. Harry finally has it in his grasp. Darcy and Asta arrive, and the ground gives way beneath their feet. Okay, so at the end of this episode, this is where they fall into the crevice, or crevasse, as it's pronounced. So this is a good episode. Things are starting to happen here. This is where we get the big blow-up between Sheriff Mike Big Black and Liv, which I really liked. I liked the fact that she stood up for herself. Later on, you find out she actually, like, has a husband or a boyfriend or whatever, you know, and that she's not this mousy, you know, abused housewife, that she, in fact, does have a spine and will stand up for herself when appropriately pushed, and that it just took her a little ways to get there, which I liked. I liked the fact that we don't start off with her being, you know, a crazy person, and she's not driven to madness. She finds the right level pitch of anger at a perfectly understandably, at a perfectly understandable situation to make her that level of angry. So I really liked all of that. And of course, Sherrick Mike is so oblivious to, you know, human emotions. Later on, he'll have a conversation with his father and they'll correct that, and that leads to the Wind Beneath My Wings scene. But in that moment, when he's like, you know, you don't respect me, and he goes, respect is earned, and banging burgers isn't going to cut it. It's like, oh my God, you're the worst character on this show.
Absolutely. I mean, for God's sakes, he basically tells her off because she, when they get the guy, the quote-unquote pharmacist who has been dealing, you know, selling the prescription drugs to the kids, you know, she starts to read the Miranda rights, and he interrupts her, goes, that's my thing. I do the Miranda rights. It's like, how petty can you get?
Do you remember, yeah, mark this on your bingo cards, kids. Do you remember that scene in The Simpsons where Bart is the, I don't know how far back your Simpsons knowledge goes. Maybe we should call up Robert now.
Yeah, but, no kidding.
The I Didn't Do It Kid, that episode where he goes on Conan, and Conan starts to dance, and then Bart starts to dance, and Conan goes, no, only I may dance.
Of course. Everyone knows that episode.
That's what it reminded me of. Anything else about the green glow?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything.
Was this the episode, I know they talked about him being depressed, was this the episode where he starts like hallucinating different jobs, and at one point he's like tattooing? Or was that later?
I'm trying to remember if that was a later episode or not. Like I said, this is the one where I mentioned earlier that we see he starts hallucinating and seeing the real Harry's corpse come out, and Harry just talks down to him. Yeah, hang on, sir. What's the line here? Can pull it back up in here. Yeah, he says, I heard you screwing my wife from the freezer the other night. Sounded like a monkey killing a dolphin.
Oh, this alien it of yours. Episode 8, End of the World as We Know It. And I feel fine. D'Arcy is knocked unconscious as Aston and Harry find themselves deep in the crevasse of the glacier. Harry is wounded, making him unable to conceal his true identity. But Asta nobly steps up to tend his medical needs and find his lost device. In guarded conversation, Harry implies that his mission is to save Earth from humanity. Eventually, D'Arcy... It's all from a certain point of view, says Obi-Wan Kenobi. Eventually, D'Arcy rescues them, has a great hero moment here. But Asta dumps her at the hospital and brings Harry to the diner, where his father chops off Harry's wounded leg, like you do. Meanwhile, Ben, on the sheriff's advice, tries to be assertive on the anniversary, taking her to an expensive restaurant, trying to order for her, and persevering with his accidental order of escargot. But Kate is less than impressed. Also, David and Lisa come down to find the alien. So, yeah, we talked a lot about Ben and Kate. I don't need to rehash that. So, the best stuff in this episode is Harry, the now known alien, further bonding with Asta. And them having some great dialogue exchange in this intimate and claustrophobic scene under peril of freezing to death overnight. Or bleeding out, as the case may be with Harry. Just a really great, intimate, claustrophobic episode.
Absolutely. Not to mention, you give credit that he's able to cover his lies so well when he talks about looking for the device. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he can't tell her that it's there to destroy the world. So he says it's there to radio back to his people to help save the planet.
Okay. Do we know at this point the reason why he's just trying to destroy the world is there's another set of aliens that wants to do something with the planet and they don't want that to happen, so it's easier to just wipe everybody out?
I was under the impression that the reason they wanted to wipe out is they basically just decided, you know what, humanity really hasn't been doing that well. Yeah, you know what, let's terminate the lease.
Okay, maybe. I was under the impression that at some point, maybe it's the next episode where they go to the, they haven't been to the con yet, have they?
No, that, oh my God, that is my favorite episode. I love, we'll talk about that, but the scene where the specialist is talking about all the different kinds of aliens.
Oh, and he's like, that one owes me money.
I love it, they are cute, and they know they're cute. Oh my God, that whole scene just kills me.
I want to say it's that episode that he talks about. There's another alien. Somebody accuses him of being that race of aliens. He's like, and he's, it's the Greys. He's talking about the Greys, and maybe I hallucinated this, but I thought he said the Greys wanted to do XYZ with humanity, and we need to make sure that doesn't happen. And then in his mind, he's like, and that's why you all need to die. That was the impression I got.
I have any of that because I remember that scene, but I thought he just talked about how the Greys were the ones that were studying humanity. It's like, we don't probe people. We don't abduct people. That's a different race.
Right. Yeah, they're talking about, like, because he's at the con to get the alien tracker because he needs it to reverse engineer the Watsy and the Doohickey and the Uppity Downy. And so that's why they're there. And so, yeah, so he talks about how there are some human beings implanted with tracking devices from other alien species, but that's not his alien species. They don't do that.
Oh, I should have in this episode. I love Asta's father. She takes him to the diner and puts him in the freezer because he admits... This is also one of the few times we get a little bit more knowledge about his alien physiology, and he says that his people prefer the cold.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he puts him in the freezer... Her father shows up, and after freaking out, as understandably one would, she's like, well, what's that? He's like, what's that alien doing in the freezer? He's violating a bunch of health codes. Move him away from the fish.
All right, episode 9, Welcome Aliens, is what we were just talking about. As Harry's leg regenerates, he discovers that his device is broken in need of foreign metal that the gray aliens implant in human abductees. He heads off to an alien convention with Asta in tow. He's caught on camera attempting to violently extract a device from a phony experiencer before succeeding in removing one from the acclaimed alien tracker, Peter Bock, played by Terry O'Quinn, who, like Mac, is able to see through Harry's genetic cloak and whose unborn son had been abducted by gray aliens 30 years prior.
Okay, being seen with the baby being abducted, again, yikes, that is legit terrifying.
Yep. I was going to say, that was absolutely horrifying. It was one of the few, like, legitimately, like... you know, I don't want to keep using the same word, but I mean, like, the very few horror elements they employ in this show, that was one of them, and it was legitimately terrifying.
Absolutely. You have this couple, the wife is pregnant, you know, they're on I couldn't tell if that was, like, a bus or a train or whatever.
And then all of a sudden, everything...
A bus, yeah. Then everything freezes, she goes in, her water breaks... She's suddenly levitating, and then everything goes back to normal. No one else has seen what happened, and she's no longer pregnant.
Right. And, of course, she screams in horror, as you would. Yeah, that was nuts. Asta, having shared a positive alien counter experience after hearing several harrowing stories, is warned by an attendee that Harry might be a Christopher Columbus. Meanwhile, David and Lisa pose as a couple and have dinner with the Hawthorns and attempt to get closer to Max, and this is where... Lisa goes and steals the piece of metal from his room. Using Deputy Liv's murder board, the sheriff assists Abigail, Sam's widow, arrests Abigail, Sam's widow, who had been having an affair as a beautician, had access to botulinum toxins used for Botox injections. He swallows his pride during karaoke, proposes that she return to the force. Darcy is befuddled by Asta's bizarre behavior, so she breaks into Harry's cabin and discovers the corpse of the real Dr. Vanderspiegel. Okay. So, I said it before, but it bears repeating. The makeup between Big Black and Liv is so good. Them singing You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings to each other. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I saw Beaches as a kid. Still breaks me up, okay? I have... That's one of those movies that I was just the right age and just the right time when I saw it. And it's still one of those movies that I hold dear as schmaltzy as it is. And, like, that song itself evokes a lot of emotion just by itself. Him singing it to her, as good as that was, holy cow, like, that guy's got some pipes.
Absolutely.
Like, she did well, too, but he blew it away, man.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, I keep going back. The convention scene is still one of my absolute favorites. I mean, for God's sakes, we get a cameo from the, I can't pronounce his name, the... dude who has the aliens meme.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who he is. I know the actor, but...
Well, he's not an actor. He's basically a UFOologist.
Okay. Well, I know the personality. I've seen him before, but as you can tell, I don't know that much about him.
Yeah, but he actually is on this, and there's a great scene with Harry hiding out from security, and he's talking to him, and the guy is going on this big spiel because he thinks Harry's a fan, and Harry's just going to town on his fruit bouquet.
I left you the melons because they taste like whatever it is he says.
Old women's perfume, to which I said, screw you, I like honeydew. And actually, I do. It's one of my favorite fruits.
This is a great episode. And then finally, you knew, even though she found the corpse, that it was going to lead to nothing and that he was gonna outsmart her. But, you know, it needed to happen. And so we finally get to the grand conclusion here. Heroes of patience. In a flashback, it is revealed that the real Harry had poisoned Sam's insulin hours before being killed by Harry himself. The humans have a word for that. It's called karma. Dorothy tells the sheriff and deputy about the real Harry's corpse, but Harry has already hidden it in the cabin's loft. Liv then finds one of the real Harry's boots on the lakeshore, leading to Harry becoming a person of interest. With his device operational again, Harry hesitates to activate it, visiting a pizzeria advertised on the radio and placing a bulk order. He imagines another conversation with the corpse, who taunts him about forming emotional connections and scolds him for taking them from him. Harry tests his device on the corpse, disintegrating it, but burns his finger when trying to pick it up. Harry may have become human enough for the device to kill him, which made no sense to me, but that's okay. As Liv tells Asta about the boot, Asta deduces the truth about Harry upon re-examining the severed foot and tells him directly they are no longer friends because he's a murderer. Heartbroken, Harry activates his device because he's emotionally stunted. Meanwhile, Lisa and David learn that Max has been spying on them and hold him and Sahar hostage. I'm just going to stop right there for 1 second. Give me 50 words on Sahar. I found her precocious, but not annoying. What did you think?
She was a fun character. I love one of her gimmicks is that she doesn't like when people curse around her. That's adult language. She's cute. We never really get a reason why she believes Max. You know, she can't see beyond the human disguise. She has no reason. We don't see that she's like a big, into UFOs or anything like that.
She just likes action and adventure, and she figures if he's at least even minimally telling the truth, this could be a fun romp.
Yeah, I kind of got the same. Yeah, and I think it's kind of nice to have that. You know, there's no other reason for her to stand by Max other than the fact that she wants to support him.
Yep.
You know, she doesn't have a crush on him. It's not like, I believe you, so I'll be your girlfriend or anything like that. She just wants to help. And yep. I like that. And I'm also going to add, I thought it was also a very positive representation of Muslims. You know, she's a Muslim. She wears her scarf everywhere.
She's an excellently written character for that, you know, in that way. Because they don't make Muslim her character. Muslim is a character trait. Like, if you were Catholic or Jewish or black or white or any, you know, or gay or lesbian or whatever, it's there. It's a part of you. It is not, in fact, 100% who you are.
Exactly.
And if she wasn't wearing the headscarf and they didn't mention it once or twice, you wouldn't have known she was Muslim. Like, I hate to use the phrase, like, they're not all in your face about it, because that tends to get associated with gays, and there's a lot of negative connotation, but they really weren't. They're not in your face about it at all. Guess what? There's Muslim people living in the United States, and they're just normal people. Great. Thanks for capturing that on film, Hollywood. Only to be beaten and chased away by Kent, Ben, and Kate. Yeah, that was some. They referred to it as Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I don't know if you ever saw the movie, but that was some fun shit.
I'd like to pretend I didn't see that movie. God,
that's fucking great, that movie. What are you, crazy?
They gave Angelina Jolie a crop top bulletproof vest.
Yeah, because boobs. Come on, you know the deal. It's Hollywood.
Crop top show abs, not boobs. If you're going to talk about, you know, obvious, you know, sexification in action movies, at least get the anatomy right.
Anatomy schmatomy. The agents then capture Dr. Stone, having been told by Max that the alien was the town doctor, like you do. Oh, it's a case of mistaken identity. How funny. And Lisa leaves with General McAllister, abandoning David, possibly to be killed later. Darcy, after being reassured by Ben that she matters, comforts Jay after she confides in her the fact that Asta is her birth mother, releasing the handbrake on Jimmy's parked truck. Harry finds his ship and plans to drop the device from space, but he sees Asta and Max held captive by government troops and fights to save them. Asta convinces Harry to spare humanity, and he leaves to dispose of his device in space. And route to his home planet, he finds Max has stowed away. My DVR actually cut away before they showed that, so I had to reread it on the thing. So two things here. One, if there was one thing in the show that I didn't care about, it wasn't so bad or done so much that I felt the need to fast-forward through it when they showed it, but boy, do I not care about Asta and Jay and their relationship. I just don't. It felt like it was something to give Jay to, you know, to give Asta to do, but Asta had plenty to do. This just felt tacked on. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. There was a bit of a really nice scene with Jay and her biological grandfather, Asta's dad, and I like that he gives her a job. And you know, when she says, like, I don't have any money, he goes, oh, don't worry, family eats for free. It is very cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the guy that plays her dad, by the way, the grandfather.
Yeah, take note, unlike in the graphic novel where he's a shaman and he talks about the spirit world, they cut all that crap.
Yeah, he might, in the comic book, he might as well have been Tatanka from the WWE or like Chief J Strongbow. In this one, again, they didn't write characters, they wrote characters. Big difference. Anyway, so our great, well-written, and this is going to sound like I'm bitching and complaining. I'm really not, but it bears, I mean, this isn't like Marvel can't stick the landing bad, but it did feel like, well, we've done this really fun murder mystery, alien, sci-fi, stranger in a strange land show with great emotions and relationships, and let's end with a shootout. All right. And I also, I don't know. It felt like they didn't quite know how to wrap it up. And so, like, Asta saying, no, I'm your friend again. I'm sorry. Please don't kill us all. Seemed a bit forced. And him just going, okay, I believe you. Like,
eh. Although I do really, really like how they show Asta putting the dots together to figure out that about the real Dr. Vanderspiegel's murder.
Yeah. That all was fine. It was just the very ending. Did it cross the finish line effectively? Yes. Did it kind of stumble? Yes. It just didn't fall flat on its face. It wasn't WandaVision. I wasn't at the end of it screaming and having to, like, hold back, you know, before the podcast because I was so angry at the way it ended. This was fine. I just didn't... I loved so much of this show. I didn't love the very end of it. I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, it was a little bit forced, and I'm not going to lie, I couldn't tell if it was the device or sudden magic powers that made the alien able to knock people out kind of with a telekinesis sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it was the device, but I felt that it really wasn't that well explained. I thought at first that he was killing them the same way he disintegrated the real Dr. Vanderspiegel's corpse, but they're not disintegrated. They're just kind of chucked across the room.
Yeah.
So I have no idea where that came from.
It was kind of like, well, we need him to do something in an action sequence here. What's he got in his hand? He's got the device. We haven't really established the device can just force project people around the room, but what if it can? Sure.
MacGuffin!
Yeah. It can do whatever the plot needs it to do in that moment. That's what I mean by, like, it kind of falls flat at the end.
Yeah, but I do absolutely love that the final line we get is when he turns around, he sees that, because Asta told Max to hide, so I could understand why he would think to hide on the ship. No one would look for him there. But when he turns around and sees him there, he says the exact same thing he said when Max first showed up in his clinic. This is some bullshit.
Right, because now he's got to go back. All right. You loved it. I loved it. I think we agree.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait for season two.
Critical response. Rotten Tomatoes has it a certified fresh with a 93% based on 29 critic reviews and an average rating of 7.6 out of 10. The consensus reads, Resident Alien takes a minute to settle it into its skin. Ha. But once it does, it finds fresh humor in a familiar framework and proves a perfect showcase for Alan Tudyk's singular comedic skills. 99% agree with that. Metacritic gave the series a weighted average of 70 out of 100 based on 15 critic reviews and generally favorable reviews. For whatever audience it got, it seemed to maintain it through the season. Like, it didn't have a sharp drop-off the way a lot of the CW shows do.
Yeah.
they started out at 1.8. It ended at 1.14 million viewers, and it got to a high of episode eight had it at 1.27, and it doesn't get any higher than that. It's low. Looks like it was episode three, Secrets, which was 0.88. So total million viewers. It only gives it for a couple of episodes here, but it did its highest million viewers with episode six, which was Sexy Beast at 3.31. So not bad. I mean, considering, like I said, this is a sci-fi show, and, you know, a lot of people write sci-fi off because Sharknado. But, you know, they picked a good one here, and I think word of mouth, people will come back to it. You know, maybe they'll watch it on, if it's on Peacock or something, people will find it. And I think it's going to, I think by season two, this will have gained a significant audience. I think between streaming, you know, and word of mouth over time, I think more people will find the show by the time season two comes around.
Absolutely. Wouldn't surprise me if season two we're going to see some more aliens. I can't help but feel that scene with the convention with them talking about the different types, and the fact that they do keep mentioning the Greys, which, for the record, I thought was a really nice touch, because whenever people think of alien visitors, we always think of the Greys. It's the skinny, long gray aliens with the big bug eyes.
Right.
You know? So I thought that was a nice touch. But looking back on it, I can't help but think, you name-dropped the Greys a few too many times. Are we going to see them come back in the next season?
Yeah. I think you're onto something there. We'll see what happens. All right. That's it. That's our review of Resident Alien. Earlier today, me and Chris Bailey couldn't be with us. He was trapped at work. But me and Chris Sheehan reviewed WrestleMania 37 in the Hall of Fame, and we talked about whether or not WrestleMania should continue to be a two-night event, or my idea, make it a week-long event. Just everything is WrestleMania, all week long. But make the actual WrestleMania 4 hours. One night, 4 hours. I can't do two nights. Yuck. And then last night, myself and Alexis Haina reviewed the book, Resident Alien. And myself and both Podsmen reviewed NXT Stand and Deliver, and I briefly mentioned NXT UK Prelude because I was the only one that watched it. All right, tomorrow we got an Unspoken Issues dropping, Doom 2099 from Jesse, and myself and Pat Mullen will be reviewing the very, very first WrestleMania, since it's WrestleMania week. And then Thursday, we've got No Holds Barred. I'm going to be defending, Sean's prosecuting. It's a Hulk Hogan classic. It's Flashback Friday. We're going to be doing one of our reviews from way back in 2013. It's going to be Star Trek Into Darkness. So that's me and Jeff Harris doing that from way back when. And then we've got syndicated source material, the 27th time we've re-aired The Killing Joke. So that's fun. Go ahead and do your plugs. Take at least 2 to 3 minutes.
All right. Well, firstly, we're going to be talk about our new show that we're going to be debuting here next month on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. We're starting a monthly trivia game. Jesse Starcher and I are going to be hosting. The theme is going to change every month. However, our first show in honor of May the 4th, May the 4th be with you. Our theme is going to be sci-fi, and we are looking for contestants. We're looking for folks who are willing to sit in with us, who, if you can actually stomach listening to me and Jesse for a while, I'd be impressed. We're going to be, thank you. If you're willing to call in with us and play via Skype, go ahead and give us a contact on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know if sci-fi is maybe not your area of expertise. Still keep listening, because, again, we will be changing the theme every month. We're talking about June's probably going to be female superheroes in honor of the upcoming film Black Widow. After that, in honor of the next film coming out that I'm excited about, Space Jam New Legacy, July's theme is going to be Warner Brothers Animation, and we're going to keep working on that, and we're going to keep coming up with new themes. So if you are interested in geek theme trivia, please give us a contact again on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know. And now on to my personal plug, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. Our Etsy and handmade at Amazon sites are fully stocked. And just to let you guys know that next month, we will be doing a week-long sale in honor of Memorial Weekend. And in addition to that sale, we will be doing a charity drive. We're going to be doing this for Tiny Homes for Homeless Veterans. This is a wonderful charity that I'd actually like to thank my mother for, clueing me into, helping to provide homes for veterans. those who have served in the military. So we're going to be looking at some details here before too long about that. So if you're looking for something fun, funky, and relating to your favorite fandoms, go ahead and check us out. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Again, we have shops on Etsy and handmade at Amazon. It's Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic.
And for more of Alexis Haina on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network, a week from tonight, we are doing a comic strip where we will be looking at the book that was then adapted by the same people who wrote the book into a movie starring Nicolas Cage, and that property is called Jiu-Jitsu, which looks...
Pray for me.
It just looks balls to the walls insane. I can't wait. We're also... I got Evan Bevins coming on to do Umbrella Academy Volume 2, Dallas, and then Alexis and Jesse will be doing a TV party with me Wednesday night for Umbrella Academy Season 2. And then on Thursday the 22nd, Pat Mullen and I will be wrapping up our History of Heavyweight Boxing series, and we'll be... after which we'll be transitioning into just kind of a monthly, semi-monthly historical boxing show. We'll focus on the Fab Four. We'll look at other various weight classes and boxers and whatnot throughout, you know, the many, many years of boxing history. But we are wrapping up with Modern Times on this series, and we'll be looking at specifically Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, and the crazy-ass Deontay Wilder. So look for that. Plus all of the Flashback Friday reviews and more stuff that we are unleashing from the archive. A whole bunch of Long Road to Ruins and On Trials that didn't make it over in the Great Content Share of 2017. All right, I'm Mark Radlich. She's Alexis Haina. This has been TV Party Tonight. Be well, be safe, and behave.